Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
The 2014 Ironman World Champion from Germany, Mr. Sebastian Kienle. Yeah. A legend.
Working on it.
Oh man! So I was reading some stuff. Did you get into the triathlon like when you were 8 years old? You decided you're going to be a pro triathlete.
I don't know if it was with eight, but
pretty close.
Yeah. My class teacher. She's living in the States now. I think somewhere in the Keys, and she just spectated one of my races last year, and she bought us. She brought me this. We had like a school newspaper. We had to do in fourth grade, and everybody has to write down what he wanna become when he's grown up. And of course, we had like special agents and pilots and. All sorts of things, and I really wrote down pro triathlete. And she was like, no, it actually has to be something realistic. And it's funny because I think I was pretty much the only one who actually became what he wrote down at that time. So the only one with a very unrealistic wish actually made the wish come true. Yeah.
What was it about triathlon that made you feel like, okay, was it because of the heritage with Thomas Hellriegel and Ferris Olsultan and all that, or was it personal experience?
I mean, I started triathlon without knowing these guys.
Yeah.
To be a little bit philosophic, I would say like the sport found me, sort of.
Yeah.
It just was a perfect match at this time. And I think probably you think if somebody decides to become something unrealistic when he's 8 years old and he actually achieved that, he must be like completely crazy and totally obsessed with the whole thing. But actually, I think it was not the case. And that's the reason why I'm sitting here doing interview with you, because I never lost the sport, the fun.
The love of it.
Yeah, the love of it and the fun about the sport, and that's the reason why I'm still doing it.
So what was your first triathlon?
We have this youth series in Germany, and it was a very small race in Süßen. Yeah.
And how old? Like 12 or something?
I guess a little bit younger, yeah. I was 11 or something, yeah.
Yeah.
10, 11.
How'd you do?
I think I got fifth place. I never won a race till I was like 16 probably, but I always was close enough to, keep the hunger and the fire burning.
Yes.
But, not just winning every race and then just be kind of satisfied and mission achieved and you could do it anyway. But I also wasn't like completely bad, so yeah.
It was enough to keep you coming back.
Definitely.
Were there any guys you were racing back then that you sort of developed little rivalries with, and they were really, really good, and either they've stayed in the sport or they've moved on? Anybody that we'd know?
No, I think most of them actually dropped out. So from the German guys, no. I think they all kind of did the mistake I avoided by, going too hard too early, mm-hmm. and just kind of burned out. And a lot of those guys who were beating me back then also had this like kind of satisfaction, and then just like stopped doing the sport.
So when did you? Was there a point? Because you got into it so young. Was the Olympics a draw for you at all? Were you thinking the Olympic format?
I actually started triathlon where triathlon wasn't an Olympic sport. That's how early I started it. So,
what year was that? 90s?
I'm wearing aero helmets for too long and too much heat, so don't make me calculate that. But it was in the early 90s. Yeah.
Okay, so triathlon didn't get accepted till 96. When it was accepted, was that something that you thought about, trying to get into it for 2000?
2006, I became German under 23 short course champion.
Yeah.
I qualified for the World Championships in Lausanne that year.
Yeah.
But then I withdraw for another guy who had more chances than me. From my perspective, because I was always a very weak swimmer, and at that year we had the German Championships at a very difficult bike course, and that was pretty much the only reason why I won the race. And but he is still in the sport. It's Jonathan Zipf.
Yes.
And he's still racing ITU.
So you gave up your spot to go to the Worlds. That's most people wouldn't do that.
Nah, it was not completely out of unselfishness or something. It was just I already made up my mind that I want to do 70.3 and long course, and I really I didn't see any future in short course. Also, what I really love about the sport is just like the level of freedom I enjoy.
Yes.
In long middle distance racing and non-drafting racing, and I don't have any federation who is nominating me for the Olympics or something. And you see it every now and then, for example, with the Swiss girls. For the last Olympic Games, there was Melanie Anaheim. She deserved the spot, but
didn't get it.
Yeah, they nominated somebody else who could potentially help.
They brought in a domestique to help.
And,
yes,
and that's just always very bad
political
with these things. And so I love the way our system is working. Yeah.
So 2009, you win Ironman 70.3 Wiesbaden, and you beat a guy, Michael Raylert, who at the time was the dominant guy. He was 70.3 world champion and was considered pretty unbeatable.
At this time, not. He just started then. I think it was his second.
Oh, the second one.
Race.
Okay, yeah. All right. So when you won that race, what was? Did you feel that was a big turning point in your career?
I think I never had this turning point. I always had a turning curve, which was like this.
Yes. Yeah.
So
those are like stepping stones.
A curve is also always a lot of turning points.
Yes.
After another, and I think it was more like this. So it was just like a logical process to end up winning one of these races,
right,
in my mind.
In your
but
mind.
Of course, from the outside, there's always something different, because the people don't take notice about the fourth places and the small races you
yes.
might have won, just like the big ones. And then they say like, ooh, where's he coming from? But I mean, those of you who are following the sport like very close know that in triathlon there's nothing like where is he coming from, or like out of the box from nowhere appeared and won
right.
Hawaii or something like that. That's never happened.
Well, when you won 70.3 Worlds in 2012, obviously the Europeans knew a lot about you, but all of a sudden when you win that and then you come to Kona, the year before, Craig Alexander won 70.3 Worlds and then he won Kona. So people are like, well, Sebastian Kienle just won 70.3 Worlds. He's going to come win Kona. Did you have more media attention in Kona because of the fact that you were the 70.3 world champion?
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, I think nobody would even have taken the smallest notice. Yeah. But but yeah, it was a good thing because at this age, you also it's not that I always like super self-confident and always go into a race and say like, yeah, I'm the greatest, I'm the fastest, I'm the best, nobody could beat me. Actually, I'm more the other way around most of the times. So a little bit attention from the media and some people who wanted to have a picture before the start.
Right.
is definitely a confident booster.
Is it hard for you when that was really a major turning point when you win 2012 Worlds and then go to Kona?
Still think it's a turning curve.
The turning curve,
yeah.
When you win 2012 World Championships and then go to Kona, did you feel more pressure because there was more people taking notice of you?
Not really the people taking notice, but they're not taking notice of me as one of the top favorites. It was more like, watch this guy, dark horse.
Yes.
And so it was just like the perfect balance of,
So then when you take fourth, how did that change things for you back home? Because once people finish in the top five, the thought is they could win the race.
Actually, I had a flat tire there too.
Yes.
So I was leading the race together with Marino in the best possible position for me. And I mean, it was more important for me that I realized I have the potential to win the race than probably that all the others are taking notice of that. Because, like I said, you know, it's not to win Kona, you have to be you need to be sure that you are able to win Kona.
Right.
You can't go into the race and say like, I have no chance. So after that, I was sure I could do it, and then you have like a clear goal, you know. Till that point, the Kona win was always like sort of a dream. But part of the turning curve is to turn your dreams into goals.
Right.
And at that point, pretty much the dream became, you know, the mission.
So then how did that change your preparation for the following year? Because you're defending champion for 70.3. And you just took fourth in Kona. So how do you balance trying to win both those titles?
The good thing is for me, I don't think that you need to balance that because it's just it just fits into each other pretty well. I mean, you look at Jan this year.
Yes.
He won 70.3 and Kona.
Right.
The year before, Jan got second. Completely sucked that time, but then I won. So that's probably out of the rule. But it's not something you can't. Those goals are going into the same direction. I mean, you mentioned Crowley winning both of these titles.
Yes.
in 1 year. So I think it's just perfect for me in the build-up phase.
Because you're doing speed to get ready for 70.3, and then you still have time to do longer stuff.
Yeah, so after the 70.3 Worlds, I always go directly to Kona. And also this year, after Australia, I fly directly to Big Island and train there very specific stuff for the next 5-6 weeks till the race. And yeah, it looks like it's going to work out pretty good.
So then you take third that second time in Kona, and now you know you're moving up the podium. Did you do much different, or again was this all stepping stones? That when you came back from finishing fourth, did you sit down with your coach and say, okay, how do we get on the podium and possibly win?
We did that, but you know how it always is when you sit down and make a plan and everything is like. Planned. The plan is after like 5 weeks, you could forget about the plan.
We can all relate.
I got Achilles tendonitis then, and so it wasn't like completely stopping me from running, but it made it like very difficult. And yeah, so there wasn't any plan anymore at all. It was more like every morning I called him, yeah, I think it feels pretty good today, so I think I go for a run. Okay, let's go for a run. And after like 7Ks, I got back home nearly crying, called him, actually it was not that good. I think I go for a swim next. So it was always like this. So the plan was always just for the next 10 hours or something, which is very difficult, especially for a professional athlete, to not have like this goal for the day, goal for the session, and goal for the next 3 weeks, and you know, to have like always like the next steps clear ahead in front of you. And yeah, it was very difficult, because I always have been lucky with injuries, and this was the first time I really had big troubles with that.
Right.
But since I was doing the sport for so long, I think I just had a very solid base to build on. So I think that's what I could tell you. The year I won Kona, my average run K per week was 30K for the whole year.
For the whole year?
For the whole year. My longest run between Ironman Frankfurt in 2014, which I won.
Which you won, yeah.
And Kona was 18K. And so I had probably like 10 weeks before Kona, I had only running weeks with 20K per week. That's it.
So
I don't want to necessarily recommend that to you as a very successful idea of training, but you know, sometimes I know a lot of people, including myself, you know, looking at all those numbers and your own statistics, like what have you done last week, what you want to do next week, and so on and so on. And you feel like you can't achieve a certain goal, probably a higher goal than you achieved last year, without putting more work into it. But that's sometimes just not true.
So when you win, I mean, you finish that 2013 season, even though you're dealing with Achilles stuff, with, you know, winning your second 70.3 title and then getting that third in Kona, you had to be, knowing how you'd been compromised during that summer, you had to feel great about the end of the season.
Absolutely, but the year before, I was flying to Kona with, you know, the win from Vegas and on a complete high and super self-confident. And that time, it was Mont-Tremblant before Kona. And with all the problems, I actually thought this year is not going to be yours. And we were already making plans before the race for the next year to come, what we need to change to finally win the race. And then I just did it.
And then you got third.
No, I mean 2014. That's
yes.
The year when I won. Then yeah.
And we'll talk about that. Did you have a healthy when you won in 2014? Like you said, you're dealing with injuries and everything. On race day, did you still go into it with the positive mindset?
Yeah, a different mindset than probably. If I would have had all these issues.
Yes.
But it was still positive. It was still like you made it to the line. I was able to run pain-free. And so, yeah, I thought like, let's just make the best out of it. And I know my swim shape was really good. And also my bike shape was really good. I was uncertain about the run. But yeah, I mean, it's really important to have this positive mindset, not only before the race, but, yeah, especially in the race then.
Well, and especially running 2:54, that's pretty darn impressive for a guy who hadn't done much run training.
Yeah, I was impressed by myself, actually. I know from Frankfurt that that it is actually possible to run in this area without that much training for me, but me and my coach, we have been aware that everything might happen. You know, I mean, it could have been that I just popped after 20K and
right.
Walk it home, but that never happened.
Fortunately, so in 2014, you know, Jan Frodeno becomes obviously a major player. And finishes, you know, third in Kona. Could you tell pretty good? He comes from winning the Olympic gold medal at the in the Olympic triathlon in 2008. So obviously he's got that raw speed. What did you think when you saw him coming over and starting to do 70.3 and Ironman?
yes, finally somebody is someone to play with. No, I mean, honestly, I'm looking even more forward to 2017 and the year after the Olympics. I guess Alistair will give it a shot, and Javi too. And I mean, I just hope that I will be at my very best in this year, and we're going to make this year epic. And that's what everybody wants to have in their sport. I mean, I know when Chris McCormick once said he wanted to be a champion, not of a nobody sport. He wanted to be a champion of a sport where the best guys are competing
right
against each other. And I'll see that coming. And I know that Jan, when he switched over from short course to long course, he didn't switch because he was running out of steam for short course, but he just wanted to do that. And he was still able to do top fives in WTC races, but that's probably the difference between a couple of other guys who came over from the short course because they were just too slow to win races there. So
right.
Yeah.
So
it was not a retirement plan for him.
Was not a retirement. So you want to race against the best. I mean, a lot of guys are like, I want to go to races where I can, you know, I'm pretty much guaranteed I'm going to get podium. Then other guys want to race against the best because they know they don't have that many races that you're going to do in your life. So you want to go to the starting line with the very best field possible.
Yeah, but I don't have the feeling that I've done that yet because, I mean, sometimes you should not be that hard on yourself. And but, you know, 2014, Jan had a flat tire
right. And
a time penalty. I mean, that was his fault. So that's part of the sport. But I want to race against him when he is at his very best and
right.
I'm at my very best. That's the thing that would just satisfy me the most.
Yeah. Have you had that yet? Because obviously you raced him in and when you beat him in Frankfurt, you know.
Yeah, but there he had three flat tires.
But look at you, still swam 49, rode 4:12, and ran 2:49.
It's 7:55.
Seven what? 7:45.
It's always difficult to judge afterwards what would have been and stuff. He was like, I don't know, 15 minutes behind me. So even without the three flats, I think I would have beaten him. But, you know, would have. And that's just something I don't really like. So
So that stuff bothers you if another guy has flats. And most people are like, let me get my check and get the hell out of here.
Yeah, sometimes I think like that too. I mean, it always depends on the day. But of course, you want to win fair, and I don't want to win out of luck, but
right.
Out of my own strengths, and yeah, that's the difference. I mean, the Czech doesn't care, right?
But you care.
Yeah.
So how did winning in Kona change things for you? That's a pretty short list of people. I think there's a total of like 36 or 37 total champions in Kona.
I think I don't let it change me that much. My life was pretty good before the Kona win,
yeah.
So it just kept being pretty good. So, but yeah, obviously, I get invited to such things like here, and you don't have to pay me, but usually I get paid.
Thank you.
Of course, a lot of people listen to you, but that also comes with the burden that you have to watch out what you are actually telling them. Yeah, I mean, most of the stuff then gets videotaped. And
you mean like this?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you start to feel that you have this responsibility.
You do.
But before that, I always thought, like, yeah, I'm responsible for myself. But
right.
Then you realize you're responsible for other young athletes who might be looking up to you. You're responsible for the sport because Actually, in Germany, I mean, Jan Frodeno just became the Sportsman of the Year.
That's huge for triathlon.
Yeah, and also myself, I've been ranked up pretty high there. So you represent the sport, and I want to represent it in the best possible way, of course. Yeah, and then you start to think, like, is the way I'm just naturally enough?
Right.
You know, could I just be myself, or do I have to... out of this burden, change myself or something like that. So I tried to balance that and represent the sport in a good way.
What was the coolest thing that happened after you won the Ironman World Championship in terms of, you invited to something really unique or meeting people who you thought you'd never meet?
I got married.
There you go.
But actually, I guess that was not because of the World Championships.
You hope.
I hope so. I met a lot of people, but it was not like that I met like this one person that changed the whole thing or something.
So when you, like you said, you'll look at a race and go, okay, Jan had two flat tires or he had three flat tires. But when you have a race like Frankfurt this year, right, you go, what, 8:01? Yeah, really, really good day. And then Jan has one of those crazy days, right, where he goes 7:49 or whatever the heck he went, something like that. Do you look at that and go, okay, I felt like I had a good day. He had a great day. There's not much I can do about it except go train harder. Or do you beat yourself up? I mean, because at 8:01,
at which time period after the race are we talking about?
Well, let's go through all of them. So, like the next day, and then 2 weeks later.
I just said I'm representing not only myself but the sport. So. Should not drop any F-bombs and stuff.
You can drop any bombs you want. That's right.
Yeah. When I'm invited, then I would say, like, fuck, shit. The day after the race, I mean, of course, like 11 minutes without having any major problems,
right,
major excuses, is just like another zip code. And that's just something where you... We not think just, I have to work hard or something. It's, just, you think like, shit, this guy is unbeatable.
Right.
But then, of course, within the next weeks to come, you start to think different about it. And you start to analyze the race and what happened before. And, like you guys say, back to the drawing board. And,
Well, and then you had a really good race, right? 70.3 at Zellamzee.
There you see. It was still another zip code, but just the last number changed.
But your run was really good.
Yeah.
You outsplit Jan, I think, in the run.
Yeah, I had the fastest run split in a race with Javi Gomez and Jan Frodeno. I never saw that coming because I still having issues with the Achilles. So, but also that you can't just look at the run split and say like, ah, this was like absolutely crazy and super fast. You also have to look at the bike split, and my bike split was just too slow. Otherwise, I would have won the race. So of course I could bike a little bit slower and run a little bit faster. But at the end,
right,
it's just the end time that matters and the result.
So you go to Kona this year as defending champion, this last October. Based on the race in Austria, did you feel confident going into the race?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I was really, really confident going into the race. And the last 5 or 6 weeks might have been the best training I've ever had, like with some of the best sessions I ever had. But, both times before I won Vegas and also, 2014, I had these problems. And usually always my preparation is shitty.
Yes.
I win the race. My preparation is perfect. I lose the race. And that's what happened.
So preparation was perfect, spot on, and yeah. Just didn't have it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you always say in Kona that the mind is deciding the race, and the mental game is so important. And you realize that when you actually lose the race because of that. Yeah, and I think that's what pretty much happened.
Can you be friends with the people you're competing against?
Oh yes, of course. I think we have to ask Jan now, but I would call him a friend. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that hard because you're, you know, on race day, you have to try to beat that person? Or is it the type of, what I love about the sport of triathlon, it's really you against the course and whoever comes faster?
I can't guarantee that I still will give you the same answer next year.
Okay.
So it can flip around pretty quick. I know just out of experience that some small things might change a thing like friendship in sport pretty quick, but at the end, yes, that's what I love in triathlon. That you know, just let me tell you a quick thing about yesterday. Yesterday, when I had a flat tire, you know, in Eco Llanos, I lost my CO2 on the course. I had a spare tube, but no CO2. And he was almost stopping and just like gave me his CO2 and his spare tube. And at this time, he might have thought like I could have caught him again and pushed him out of the top five. So that's what I love about the sport. You know, it's really hard competition and everybody gives his very best. But at the end, it's still most of the times very fair.
So, in terms of your learning curve, is there a year that you looked as part of the turning curve, not a turning point, the curve, a few races strung together that helped you realize that you can become an Ironman champion?
Yeah, like I said, it's not that one race or that one year where everything changed. It just came one thing after another and one race after another. But for sure, the first time Kona, I know that the race is going to suit me.
Yes.
And it's not for everybody, you know, with the heat, non-wetsuit swim and everything. You just have to have this certain, you know, ability when it comes to Kona, and I figured out that I love the race, and I think that's very important. And also, when you come there the first time and you have a very negative experience, I think it's going to change a lot of things, you know, and for the years to come.
Yeah.
So I had a very positive
first
experience,
yes.
And then went on like that with our little relationship.
What other races do you love? You've done Challenge Roth a few times, and we've talked about that here before, how special that event is.
I think I pretty much love all of them.
Do you?
Otherwise, I would not do them.
Okay.
I mean, every race has something nice, and I like the Xterra in Maui. That's still one of my favorite races to do. I like U.S. races here. It's just a very iconic and great race in St. George.
Yes.
I'm looking really forward to do this year again. So every race has something special and some good memories about that, even if it has nothing to do with a good result. Yeah.
So Germany obviously has a great heritage in the sport with everybody from, you know, Wolfgang Dietrich to Jürgen Zach to Norman Stadler and all the rest. When did you get to meet some of those guys, and what do you remember from that?
Yeah, pretty early on. The club I start doing triathlon, Thomas Hellriegel, just trains there pretty much every day. And also Norman Stadler was there from time to time. So I met them pretty early. And I started pretty much cycling with them. Yeah.
How cool was that?
Not so cool.
Did they hurt you?
Yeah, you know, I at the beginning, I didn't really. I think I didn't really know who they are, and I always thought like I'm a very weak cyclist because I was always training with them, and that's the only guys I know when I was riding with. Otherwise, I was riding for myself. And
so you thought from riding with those guys, you're getting dropped all the time. They're
yeah, I always thought like, nah, cycling is probably not your strength. Till I did my first race, and I was pretty confused.
That is great.
Yeah.
Now, were those guys open? Were they helpful? Or they just like to drop you on race and rides?
No, absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I wanna be like, and for the younger athletes too. It's just like how you get treated. You like to treat the others, and also. In the races I've done in Germany when I started to get towards a professional career, mm-hmm. You know, I raced against Timo, against Steffen Liebetrau, and a lot of other pretty talented German guys, and they always treated me very well. Even if I started beating them, yeah,
they were still nice to you.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not. Something that's, you know, for granted, because a lot of guys, they are nice to you and everything till you start to be better than them, and then they are not so nice anymore. But yeah, they really accepted me, and that was great, and I want to pass it on to the next generation. Yeah.
You seem like
talking like an old guy.
Exactly. Yeah, you're only 31. If you look at a lot of the guys you're competing with, a lot of them are, you know, 35, 36, 37. They've been around this for a long time. You're still a young guy. How long do you want to race as a professional?
90. No. I mean, you never know. You never know it. I mean, it's not what you make as a plan. It's just... what your body allows you to do, you know. I mean, racing as a professional means you have to win races,
right?
Or at least cashing every now and then. And that's just up to your abilities and your body. You know, with the injuries and everything, it might be over after this year. But just like from the mental point of view. Yeah. I would love to do like another five, six, seven years.
Why not? McCam Brown, Craig Alexander, all those guys are still, they're still going strong.
Well, I think even with 40, you have to do another job after my professional career. And I want to start that early enough, you know, and not just keep on going forever. I will do the sport forever.
I was going to ask
as long
you that.
As long as I could, but not as a professional.
So, but you're one of those guys, since you started when you're so young, this is your sport. You'll stay in this forever.
Yeah, of course I will do other stuff too. I would love to do Cape Epic mountain bike race,
right.
Crocodile Trophy, if that still exists, stuff like that, Leadwheel, couple of mountain bike things, probably Xterra, some swim runs,
right.
Whatever.
Will you do you try to mix in some Xterra stuff during the regular season? Or do you try to
not so
this?
Much anymore, because it's so difficult. The schedule is already so tight with all those races, so that it's getting more and more difficult to to do that. And then if I want to do Xterra, I want to win Xterra, and then you have to train for it on the mountain bike and everything, and often for me it gets a little bit dangerous, and so
you fall down. That's not good.
Yeah.
Well, so what is the plans for the rest of the season? Do you still have to do a full
win,
right?
Every race I'm competing from now on.
Exactly. Yeah. How about that? Win them all.
As I said, I'm gonna do St. George 70.3,
yep.
Chattanooga. Then I fly back to Germany and I do 70.3 in Kraichgau. Then Ironman Frankfurt, then 70.3 World Championships Australia, and then the big one, Kona.
So Jan Frodeno's defending champion. He's got your title. How do you get your title back?
Beating him and all the other guys. I mean, he definitely is not like a triathlon robot or something, you know.
No.
Even with the race in Frankfurt, I don't want to say that I was able to do that too on that day. I don't know. I'll try to find out this year. But in Kona, he wasn't doing something like totally crazy, you know.
Right.
I mean, I was actually a couple of seconds faster than him. My win 2014. So that was what I was telling him after the race, of course. No. But it's just like, it's not that he's unbeatable. I mean, he is on the bike now. He's absolutely on my level. On the swim, he's on a completely other level. But you see that also when he's going hard on the bike, it's definitely like affecting his run big time.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
We have seen in Cell when I was running faster than him, and also in Kona, he was definitely not running slow, but he was just like a normal human being, you know, with some gravity.
Yes.
On Queen K. So, and that's definitely something I could keep up with.
So you mentioned that you're now, are you married or are you engaged to be married?
No, I am married.
Nice. And that was recent.
The reasons to get married.
No, recent. recent. It just happened.
In December, yeah. I proposed in Kona.
Nice. So where's the honeymoon?
I think we're going to have like a bigger celebration in July with all friends. And I think we're going to have honeymoon right after Ironman Frankfurt. It's always difficult to fit everything in the racing schedule.
Yeah. So what is it about the sport of triathlon that makes it great? If you're talking to somebody new coming into the sport.
You're looking at the watch all the time, so I don't know how much time we have to explain that. Actually, it's a lot. For me, I already mentioned the level of freedom I have to decide what race I want to do, what training camp I want to go, who I'm training with.
Who you're sponsored by, all that stuff.
Everything, yeah. Everything is my decision, and that's just... Yeah, that's just something I really, really enjoy. And, you know, also this how the system works in our sport is just something I enjoy, you know. When you look at other sports, probably sports where you have judges, probably sports where you have a team, when somebody, director sportif at the Tour de France is just deciding this is the rider we are going for today. And even if you're stronger, it doesn't matter. You have to work for this guy. And it's not something that I would probably also enjoy to work for somebody else. But in our sport, it's just very easy and very fair and crystal clear. And, that's what I love about the sport. And then it's, beside from having these goals of winning races and the satisfaction that comes with achieving these goals, it's also... the sportsmanship I already mentioned. It's just great to be part of the sport and train with guys that I really like and that I'm racing against, but still having a couple of beers with them. And there's so much more. When you come back from a 6-hour ride in the rain in 3 degrees Celsius, it's like getting under the shower and having a choco bar, it's like the greatest thing on earth. Honestly. It's just something when people ask you why you're doing the sport, I mean, what are you saying? It's always the same thing. Just in the last 100 years we decided to use cars and elevators and planes and all this stuff. And before that, we were just like running around, you know,
right?
And you know, hunting deers and whatsoever. So you know, the human body, the human being is just like built to work out and built to move, and that's the reason why we can't be happy without any movement, I guess. And some people might not agree with me, but when they start to do it, they will agree with me.
Exactly. So when you talk about sportsmanship last year in Kona, when you were running and Andreas Rehlert could tell you needed to be cooled down a little bit and poured water on your head, that to me is the epitome of sportsmanship, right? You guys are competing for prize money at that point and stature and being, you know, ranked in terms of the top German athletes for that race. What did that reinforce your whole feeling about this sport?
It more reinforced my feeling of everything around the sport and everything out of the sport, because I didn't even found it that big of a deal till the pictures got released to the press.
Right.
And I, at a sudden, I had like 25 emails from major German newspapers and TV stations and stuff, and I was like, what? It was nothing.
It probably happens all the time.
That I saved a life or something. I mean, I, at this point of the race, I actually had the feeling that he was saving my life. But yeah, it's nothing out of the ordinary, what I guess. But that tells everything about the sport, but it also tells a lot about probably other sports and probably a lot about the people who are reporting in sports that are not used to stuff like this anymore.
Right.
That's very sad.
How about a round of applause for Mr. Sebastian Kienle?